Oh, I'm gonna punch you in the head. I'm gonna punch you in the head. I'm gonna punch you in the head for Jesus. I'm gonna punch you in the head. You will wish that you were dead when I punch you in the head for Jesus. Well, I turn the other cheek and be mild and mean. This is what was said by Jesus. But I can't sit on the fence. I'm gonna resort to violence when I punch you in the head for Jesus. I'm gonna punch you in the head. I'm gonna punch you in the head. I'm gonna punch you in the head for Jesus. I'm gonna punch you in the head. You will wish that you were dead when I punch you in the head for Jesus.
And the nonprofits we are. I'm Dennis Lube. Matt Dillahunty, Russell Glasser, and special guest Aaron Ra, along with me are.
That's Aaron Ra.
Aaron Ra.
I'm intimidated already.
The Dillahunty International Studios on the 13th of March 2010. We are coming to you live from and listening to Punch You in the Head for Jesus by Kirk 420. You have been. Sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, the nonprofits are a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and separation of church and state, the ACA is. Call the voicemail at 512-371-2911, you should, or visit the website at www.atheist-community.org, and more information you will have. The Happy Hour, the ACA has. The Dog and Duck on Thursdays at 7 it is. Broadcasting live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time we are. Participate in the show you can, but following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com you must. Sit back you should. Enjoy the show you will. That was terribly delivered. Sorry about that.
It was like Yoda without a voice.
Yes. I wasn't going to do the Yoda voice. That would have been even worse.
You'd have made do. So here we are. We had actually skipped a show, and my apologies for that. We'll do what we can to make up for it. We've already started by having a special guest who has graciously agreed to drive all the way down here for both shows. Aaron Ra, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much.
Most of you would know him from YouTube fame and the fabulous anti-creationism videos that he's been putting up that have been educating people for how long have you been doing it? Couple years.
I've been into this for about 2 years now, and I'd like to say that when I got started on this, I only had a few videos of maybe six at most, and I remember suddenly I got hundreds of subscribers coming in all in one day, and I traced it down to this drunken Tasmanian that did a shout out to a handful of his subscribers, and he was one of these guys that always has a beer in his hand, you know, the typical Tasmanian image, and he pushed me to all of his friends, and eventually I started picking up more subscribers, and he kind of fell by the wayside, stopped doing anything at all. Well, I did my five facts video, my tag video, and I liked the stuff that I had seen by him, and so I wanted to give a shout out to him, and I tagged him in that video, and he responded that all of a sudden he had hundreds of subscribers coming in out of the blue and wanted to find out why, and felt, he said, inspired to go on after I kicked him in the butt and got him motivated again. And that was Ace Skegg, who I understand had you on his show a couple weeks after that, or a couple weeks ago, rather.
Yeah.
And I was glad to have motivated him in that direction.
Yeah, we've been I did a show for a the guys in Taz, and another one for a group in Australia, and a bunch of other stuff, but today, we're glad to have you here. I got miscellaneous stuff going on. The quick announcements to get out of the way. March 20th is the ACA pub crawl. We're going to meet. You can find out more information at the website, www.atheist-community.org. We're going to meet at the Dog and Duck at 17th and Guadalupe. The time and all the information is up there. You can also get contact information for how to order the T-shirt that everybody's going to be wearing. And we're going to put in an order for those. I think they're $20. for everybody who's planning on attending. If you're not in the Austin area and you're not going to make it to the pub crawl, but you still want the t-shirt, you can actually go to Zazzle.com/ACA products, all one word, no spaces. And I've put the t-shirt design up there. You can go in and customize it. You can change, you know, how expensive of a shirt you want. You can put this logo on whatever shirt, and you can feel a part of our drunken debauchery, even if you're not able to actually be here. Quick notes in addition to ACA stuff, I'm going to be speaking at Washington State University Pullman on March 24th on the superiority of secular morality. And Russell and I, is this confirmed yet?
I think it's pretty much confirmed, although we haven't gotten the tickets yet.
So it's April 10th or 9th and 10th?
April 9th and 10th. That's a Friday and a Saturday. We're going to be in Peoria, Illinois.
Bradley University.
Bradley University, right.
Yeah, and we're doing a two-man, two-day tag team event. So that right. should be a lot of fun.
Shout out to our sponsor, Matthew, but I won't give his last name because I don't think he wants to be well-known. But thanks a lot for setting this up. And Matthew tells me that there's probably going to be Christians outnumbering the atheists there. So we can use what?
Suits me.
Yeah, you could. We can use all the support we can get, and you know, it's also going to be a fun Q&A session, I think.
So that's the end of the announcements. Let's dig right into the news stuff and mail stuff, and do the normal round table. Dennis, did you want to go first, or Russell? Are you going first?
For usual news stories and stuff, should we cover the Vatican first and everything?
Why not?
Well, of course, let's see here. There's, first off, the Dutch aren't immune to the Catholic Church. They've got their own sex scandal now. The priests molesting little boys. So that should come as no surprise. Let's see, part of the story is Jeanine Garrett's now 57, suffered repeated sexual abuse from the age of 11 at the hands of a priest at the Roman Catholic school where she was a boarder. His ordeal began in 1964 at the Don Ruan Monastery in the town of Heerenberg in the east of the Netherlands. He was being trained by the Salesian fathers of Don Bosco in the hope of one day becoming a missionary. But now he's a victim, so.
Poor guy.
So it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Somehow or another, you kind of lost me on that one.
What?
It was, maybe I was distracted on the other machine.
Yeah.
By the way, happy birthday.
Oh, thanks.
Today is Dennis's birthday, and
thanks.
I meant
that'll,
to mention
that'll only
earlier.
Increase the amount of email I get.
Yes. And Facebook. Dennis loves Facebook messages more than anything.
Everybody add Dennis and send him a happy birthday message.
I'm doomed.
You're welcome,
doomed.
Dennis.
So I want to pimp this website again. I posted it. I let everybody know at Facebook as well. Texas Freedom Network has a blog, and they are absolutely outstanding and relentless in monitoring what goes on with the State Board of Education. They were blogging the social studies hearings all week, and it was I couldn't keep monitoring the blog because I kept getting more and more pissed off. I'm going to try and find the list of exactly what all they changed, but one of them, get this up here. Don McElroy, it will not be on the school board next year.
Hooray.
Is evidently, along with Cynthia Dunbar, who also will not be on the school board next year, doing everything they can to completely screw up the social studies standards.
Boo.
According to McElroy, they're adding balance.
Oh, God.
And their accusation is that history has already been skewed to the left by academia, and they're trying to set it right. So one of the things that they've done is to remove Thomas Jefferson from the social studies standards with respect to people who were critical to set founding the nation, mm-hmm. or the revolutionary ideas that led to the construction of the United States. And they've replaced him in the standards with, among others, John Calvin.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
A man with virtually no significance in American history whatsoever.
Calvinists exist here, but then so do Wiccans. So,
As I said before the show started, I mean, we are talking about the founder of the Republican Party. We're talking about the author of the Declaration of Independence. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, actually, I think the Republican Party was founded in 1854, which I looked up after you said that. So, sorry to contradict you.
But, yeah, you're talking about,
but yes.
The author of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
The author of the Virginia Statute
but
on Religious Freedom.
He's not important. He's not important anymore.
Apparently. Yeah. I don't know that they've necessarily removed him entirely from all social studies discussions.
Only a matter of time.
But in this regard, they did. They cut him from a list of figures whose writing inspired revolutions in the late 18th century. I'm sure Thomas Jefferson will still be covered in other contexts.
Well, one of the other things that they're blocking is that they don't, you know, McElroy and Dunbar do not want children to be taught that the United States government prohibits the promotion of one religion by the state over any other religion. They don't want children to know that the United States cannot back any particular religion, and let's say specifically Christianity, over any and other all other religions.
They don't even want them to think it's an option.
Because how could it be that we were a Christian nation if, in fact, our founding documents prohibit the United States from endorsing any one religion? Mm-hmm. How would it be possible to have freedom of religion if we are promoting one religion over any other? And so one of the big problems I've had, and I've had with McElroy in the few dealings that I've had with him, is that he and his ilk are wantonly dishonest. They are trying to teach children things that they know are wrong, and they don't care that they're wrong.
So they're no longer satisfied with just reinterpreting the Constitution. They're trying to say that it never happened, basically.
What they want to do is, once again, we're not talking about improving understanding, which is the position of science.
Right.
We're not talking about getting the facts straight, you know, which it should be in academia. It should be accurate. We're talking about making believe, and specifically making the children believe what we want them to believe, and conditioning them. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever been to, YMCA or youth camps or, you know, any of those Christian organization things. I'm sure you have.
Uh-huh.
I think I went to one where they train you to believe. I mean, here I'm like 11 years old, and I'm being trained to close my eyes and learn how to walk in the dark and just trust whatever the people are going to do around me with my eyes closed. We're trained to be wantonly gullible, and this is promoted. And this is the sort of mindset that McElroy and his ilk want to perpetuate.
Yeah, because children are a means to an end to them.
What is your background in that stuff, Aaron?
I'd rather not go into that, really. I mean, I can tell you that I was raised, and it was much to my benefit, I was raised in a Mormon community. Now, Utah, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, a good deal of that is Mormon dominant. And people in other parts of the country won't realize that, and certainly people in Texas won't understand that at all. I mean, I used to work with some people here in Dallas area, or in the Dallas area, and I mentioned that some of my family were Mormon. One guy said, "Well, what's that?" And the other guy said, "Well, that's when a woman likes other women."
Whoa!
So not entirely attached.
No, that's a thespian.
That's right.
Yeah, but seriously, in those states that I just mentioned, Mormon population is very dominant. It is possible to be in an all-Mormon community.
I'm familiar with that, being a fan of Big Love, the show, not the practice.
When I moved out of those states, you know, people would ask me, "What is your religion?" And I knew when I was a little kid, if another child asked me what my religion was, there's going to be a problem. I don't have to say what my religion is. Just the fact that they're interested to know tells me that there's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always had two answers. Either I could say, well, my family is Mormon, and that's all I ever said. I never said I was Mormon. Not because I didn't believe like Mormons believe, but because I didn't know what Mormons believe. So how could I say if I'm a Mormon or not? I'm not going to say, well, I believe what my mom believes because my mom believes that. That wouldn't make sense.
Right.
I know other people do that, and for that it does make sense, but it doesn't to me. So I would tell people that, you know, I don't have a religion of my own, but my family is Mormon. And then once I would tell anybody that my family is Mormon, if they were not Mormon, then I would get to hear all the ridiculous things that Mormons believe that no Mormon I ever met believed. And why I said it was an advantage that I was raised in a Mormon community is because I got to see the prejudice, interdenominational prejudice within Christianity. Many people will tell you that Mormons aren't really Christians. Well, yes, they are. They adhere to every tenet of the Nicene Creed. And even with Catholics, if Catholics have their own creed, they still adhere to every tenet of the Nicene Creed. It still applies to Catholicism. So you can't just wipe out whole factions of Christians. You know, these denominations don't belong.
They're not real Christians.
Yes. That gets into the no true Scotsman fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would begin to understand that these people are telling me things that my family supposedly believes, but they won't tell my family that they believe that. They'll tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea is to denigrate without representation so that I will question what my own family believes and come into the fold of some ignorant zealot who is promoting and perpetuating ideas that they just basically pulled out of their ass and are presenting as fact.
Can you give me an example of something they would say that is a stupid thing that Mormons believe that they don't? Because I've heard a lot of pretty silly things that Mormons are actually supposed to believe. I hope they're accurate.
I've heard a lot of really silly things that Mormons actually do believe, too. And so I would rather, because as I said, my family is still involved in that, I'd rather leave that alone. I will tell you this. My stepdaughter hit me with a very surprising question, completely out of the blue. I think we were sitting in a doctor's office waiting for the doctor to come in, you know, just twiddling our thumbs in silence, and she suddenly says, "What is the silliest religion?" And that was it. And I had to answer. Well, I said, how do I answer a question like that? I mean, as far as I can tell, every religion believes some wacky crap. I mean, I couldn't.
Boy, there's a competition for you.
And so I had to explain that from my perspective, I said that Christianity and Islam were at a toss-up, not because either one was sillier than the other, but because both of them were interested in global domination. And that I could tolerate any number of fallacies that you want to embrace. And if you want to believe in Pegasus and fairies and unicorns, go to it. But when you begin to force uniforms and behaviors and...
Well, that's not so much silly as dangerous. What's the most dangerous religion? Sure. Christianity and Islam are clearly the most dangerous.
Well, then again, I'd want to give a fair answer. Is it that they are the most dangerous because they have the most power?
Yeah.
Or are they if the Santeria or some other group like that had more power, would they be more dangerous still? I don't know.
Yeah, I keep hearing Jainists are all, you know, peace and love and all this stuff. Who knows?
Jains don't want to have any effect on karma whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sofa is a perfect Jain.
Cool.
Doesn't do anything.
It's an atheist, too. It doesn't believe in God.
So, going back, I found the actual note from the Texas Freedom Network. This kind of summarizes what went down during the social studies curriculum evaluation this past week. Some board members themselves acknowledged this morning that the process for revising curriculum standards in Texas is seriously broken. You think?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things is that we review these standards every 10 years, which means these asshats who are up there this week who have been voted out or who have not sought re-election are making changes that we can't fix for another decade. Ten years, we're going to be stuck with these social studies standards unless there's some kind of method for special intervention, which I'm not positive about.
And the rest of the country gets stuck with it, too. I mean, yeah, large portions of the country have to use the textbooks that we approve because we are one of the few buyers large enough to make it worth their while to change for.
So, indirectly, a willfully ignorant dentist who believes that someone needs to stand up to the experts.
Yes.
And oppose those who know what they're talking about. Is the one who is in charge of the education for the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Brilliant system.
Right.
In large effect, that's actually right on the money. So, continuing, with politics and personal agendas dominating just about every decision, we could probably choose a handful of names at random from a phone book and find folks who demonstrate more competence and responsibility in deciding what nearly 5 million Texas kids learn in the public school classrooms. During meetings in January and this week, the State Board made numerous changes to standards proposed by teachers, scholars, and other curriculum writers over the past year. Among the decisions made by the Board this week, number one, the Board rejected a proposed standard requiring students to examine the reasons the Founding Fathers protected religious freedom in America by barring government from promoting or disfavoring any particular religion over all others.
Of course they did.
That means the Board opposes teaching students about the most fundamental constitutional protection for religious freedom in America. That's one.
Yep.
I'm going to go down the list, and I think everybody will see the agenda behind these decisions.
To this? Yeah.
Number two, even as Board members continued to demand that students learn about American exceptionalism, the Board stripped Thomas Jefferson from a world history standard about the influence of Enlightenment thinkers on political revolutions from the 1700s to today. In Jefferson's place, the Board's religious conservatives succeeded in inserting Thomas Aquinas, John Calvin. They also removed the reference to Enlightenment ideas in the standard, requiring that students should simply learn about the influence of the writings of various thinkers, including Calvin and Aquinas. The Board removed the word capitalism from the standards, mandating that the term for the economic system be called free enterprise throughout the standards. Board members such as Terry Leo and Ken Mercer charged that capitalism is a negative term used by, quote, liberal professors in academia, as in capitalist pig.
For God's sake!
But there's
the
more. The Board removed Santa Barraza from a grade 7 Texas history standard on Texans who have made contributions to the arts because Board conservatives objected to one of her many paintings, which included a depiction of a woman's exposed breasts. Some of Barraza's work has been displayed in the Texas Governor's Mansion during the gubernatorial administration of George W. Bush in the 90s. Board members added Friedrich von Hayek into a standard in the high school economics course, even though some board members acknowledged that they had no idea who the influential Austrian-born economist even was. In a high school government standard about the importance of expression of different points of view in a democratic republic, Board conservatives added a requirement that students learn about the Second Amendment's right to bear arms. We want to teach our students about diversity, and while we're at it, let's let them know they can carry a gun.
Gun, yeah.
But not that they have the right to free speech or separation of church and state. I mean, I'm actually for teaching kids about the Second Amendment, but not as like a special amendment.
Yeah. So are they not using the word Enlightenment anymore? The Enlightenment?
Yeah.
So are they going to next go after the Dark Ages and remove that?
The moderately dim ages.
Call it the glorious
the
age
godly
of Christianity?
Ages.
They're already trying to do that.
So David Bradley, one of the members of the school board, is quoted as saying, "I reject the notion by the left of a constitutional separation of church and state. I have $1,000 for the charity of your choice if you can find it in the Constitution." This particular game that gets played by David Barton of Wall Builders and these other guys who are trying to claim that there's no separation of church and state.
Who, by the way, feel free to make shit up when they want the Founding Fathers to say something that supports them.
Yeah. It's a little play of word on word. It's a word game.
Yeah,
because
sure.
You can open the Constitution and you will nowhere will you find separation of church and state.
Right.
They're correct.
And nowhere in the Bible will you find the word Trinity.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I have a great deal of fun when I try to point out to somebody that the Bible doesn't say anywhere that the serpent in the garden was anything but a snake.
That's yeah. true, too.
Yep. And they say, oh, well, Revelation's 9. Ah, but, okay, so they say serpent, and it's in relation to Satan. But they don't say that it's the same serpent. They certainly don't refer to the serpent in the garden. But if you look over here, Jesus says that all of these Pharisees are serpents themselves. Is he calling them Satan, too? Because in the context of the same conversation, he does link them with the devil. Is he saying that the Pharisees were tempting Eve? Sorry to...
No. And it gets worse than that when you start looking into the difference between Satan, Lucifer, devil, whatever word you actually want to put on it. Because, for example, Lucifer is morning star, and Jesus is also referred to as the morning star at one point. In the Old Testament, you've got Satan as the accuser working for God. He's the one who comes up and says, hey, you know, this Job guy, I think we should maybe test him. Now, you've got this interaction between the deity and the villain, and then people will toss the labels around. Oh, that's Satan, it's Lucifer, and they're all one, and it's just this big mess. And then they go back to the Garden of Eden and say, it wasn't just a snake that tempted Eve. It wasn't just a talking, walking snake that tempted Eve. It was actually Satan in disguise.
Well, it's better than that, because if you look at the paintings of Michelangelo or just about anybody from the Renaissance, it was a talking, walking snake with boobs.
Cool.
Who many of the Jews at the time referred to as Lilith, Adam's first wife in Talmudic legend.
Yeah.
I tend to do what she said, yeah.
I love pointing out to people that tell me that the serpent in the garden was Satan. I love pointing out Michelangelo's paintings or anything else from the Renaissance, whether it's an impression,
right.
whether it's a, you know, you can call all the out of context that you want to, but I'm sorry, the serpent has tits and long flowing hair and a great figure. She's a Naga. And that's the way that the serpent is carved on the side of the, Notre Dame Cathedral,
right.
Okay? Is Notre Dame Christian? Is Michelangelo Christian? Is the Sistine Chapel Christian? These are not out of context. That snake has tits.
Yep, and we're being punished because an absolutely naive person was fooled by a character known as the Father of Lies.
Yes.
With unknown supernatural powers of persuasion.
And her like, great failure
thanks.
Is that she doesn't know the difference between right and wrong.
Right. Oh, we didn't program that in yet.
Okay, so she's punished for not knowing right and wrong when the wrong was knowing right from wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to detract off that. We were having a political discussion, I believe.
Yeah.
We were talking about the school board and McElroy and people who, people for whom.
Are they going after Ben Franklin?
They will be shortly.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
There's a number of other things they did. I'm gonna keep looking because I didn't get a chance to actually combine this stuff. I know that Cargill had said that sociology tends to blame society for everything, so they were trying to change the sociology standards with regard to the importance of personal responsibility for life choices in a section on teen suicide, dating, violence, sexuality, drug use, and eating disorders. They're doing... I know there was another standard, I'm still trying to find it, where they were encouraged to teach diversity training, and somebody from the state board shot it down and said, no, if we do that, they'll be learning about transsexuals and all kinds of stuff like that.
Right.
I'm still looking for the specific language on that.
Here's another illustration of the problem. When I took a class in History of World Religions, which was enormously beneficial to me, and the instructor was excellent, and that matters a hell of a lot for whatever class you want to take. Make sure to rate your professors. They make all the difference. But I took this class, and it required that I visit a number of religious facilities that were not part of any religion that I adhere to. And the instructor encouraged us to go as far outside what we were brought up with as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, what you're getting with these messages or these lessons in diversity, and these people are not trying to think, not trying to teach you to think out of the box. They're not trying to they don't want you to learn about diversity whatsoever. Okay, they're trying to confine your thinking. And when I went to these little field trips that I had to go on, I often took my kids because I wanted them to reap the benefit of it as well. We went to a Buddhist temple, which is a very good experience. And we went to a Krishna temple, highly recommended because they have a all-vegetarian restaurant included in the temple. The temple is really exquisite. The restaurant in Dallas is Kalachandri's, and the temple really is gorgeous, beautiful waxed floors, lots of statuettes of the god and the goddess and of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Wow.
How much time did you spend practicing that?
I bought his books. I explored as much as I could of religion the whole time I was growing up. I read Prabhupada's Science of Self-Realization when I was 16. I mean, I found that if there was a truth behind religion, that the way to find that was to go to the root of all existent religions because they diverge from each other.
Right.
So I eventually discarded Christianity and then with it Judaism and Islam and all of the Western monotheism and found myself in the East. And were it not for the fact that Hinduism has also so much mythology to it, I would have more likely embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
But I took my kids on these field trips to these temples and whatnot, and then shortly afterward, we were in a grocery line in Texas, and they were selling incense. You know, they always have the little things right by the register to sell, and somebody had incense, and there's Krishna. And I said, look, kids, it's Krishna. And some typical Texas resident standing in line in front of me looks at this blue guy on the box of incense and says, who's that? And I have to tell her, Krishna,
oh, no.
The Hindu version of Jesus, predating Christianity by some 600 years.
Uh-oh.
And she stopped me before I could really, get into the spiel. She stopped me and said, if it isn't from Jesus, it's of the devil.
Uh-huh.
That's the level of Texans' understanding of diversity.
Yeah, it's a level of thought.
Well, all this talk about religion and politics reminds me of something amusing that happened with Glenn Beck this week.
really?
It's not really something that concerns us in particular. I'm sorry, you're not done with the school board?
Last thing, because I'm not going to find the other one. They did take a vote on whether to use BCAD or BCBCE or CEBCE.
Uh-huh.
Guess which one won.
I'm guessing BCAD.
Yeah, and by the way, almost all of these votes went directly along party lines, 10-5, Republicans, Democrat. Anyway, continue with Glenn Beck.
Texas. Yeah, okay, I mean, this is not really something that concerns us atheists directly. It's more of something that we can watch with amusement from the sidelines. On his daily radio show and television shows last week, Fox News personality Glenn Beck set out to convince his audience that social justice, the term many Christian churches use to describe their efforts to address poverty and human rights, is a code word for communism and Nazism. Beck urged Christians to discuss the term with their priests and to leave their churches if leaders would not reconsider their emphasis on social justice. That's right, Glenn Beck is now telling you which church you're allowed to go to. I'm begging you, your right to religion and freedom to exercise religion and read all of the passages of the Bible as you want to read them and as your church wants to preach them are going to come under the ropes in the next year. If it lasts that long, it will be the next year. I beg you, look for the words social justice or economic justice on your church website. If you find it, run as fast as you can. Social justice and economic justice, they're code words. Oh, am I advising people to leave their church? Yes!
Wow.
And I mean, it's just an interesting insight there because, I mean, we always say that these church and state separation arguments really aren't about making the world safe for atheists. They're about making religions safe from each other.
Yes. One of the
go on.
One of the things that I keep bringing up to Christians whenever we get into these arguments, and now that we're becoming more diverse in Dallas, it occasionally happens that I have these conversations with Muslims as well. I try to explain to them, how is it, or get them to understand the question. You can't you can't tell them anything because they're all, their eyes are just going to glaze over. They're going to blot out whatever you say. So you have to ask them the question and expect the answer and provoke them to give an answer. How do you have freedom of religion if you promote one over any other? Right away they should see a problem, and right away they start backpedaling and making up excuses and diverting, and then coming up with other ways out of the argument, trying to find a quick escape.
Right. I mean, you know, people who until now have not been concerned with separation of church and state ought to take a hard look at exactly what Glenn Beck's religion entails and figure out if it is exactly what their religion is. Because, you know, you should ask yourselves the question, do you guys want Glenn Beck deciding which church you're allowed to go to?
Right. Do you want Glenn Beck to decide what your children are taught in school? Well, yeah, a bunch of them would say yes, but
yeah,
and Rush Limbaugh too.
Yeah,
you can tell which people or when people are thinking and responding exactly the way they've been trained and conditioned to by the media. You ever notice when we were kids, you'd like watch, you know, like sitcoms even. You remember The Facts of Life, that hideous show with the girls that all got big and fat later on? In shows like that back in the, you know, 70s and 80s, have you ever noticed that anybody that, if any character on the show were to experiment with marijuana, for example, it was always a peripheral character. It was never a main character.
And it's a very special episode.
Right,
about
it was a very special episode, a social consciousness episode, and it was always related to somehow that kid had bad parents, right? And remember Arthur Fonzarelli, who wore a college jacket, not a biker's jacket? He had a Triumph, not a Harley, because they didn't want anybody to think that Harley riders who had any kind of a good image. And they never showed him on the bike, you know. It's all these little standards on what...
Except when he jumped the shark.
Eventually, they had to do something.
Yeah.
When the show was popular and the show was working, he wasn't allowed to do any of that. When they try to evoke ratings, then maybe they'll try something else. But as you can see, even looking at the TV shows back then, you can see how we're supposed to think a certain way, and we're being trained to think a certain way. And when people go to school trained in high school and junior high by Don McLeroy and people of his ilk, and then they get into college and they discover, oh, there was this guy named who? Jefferson? We weren't told about him. Why were we not told about him?
Yeah, and I want to just again to hit that, I don't think that the school board has removed Thomas Jefferson from history classes entirely. It was with respect to this one thing about writings influencing revolutions and stuff. I can't believe that they would scrub a president and author of the Declaration of Independence, etc., from history books entirely. Although we may not be far from that.
Well, they have to make more room for Ronald Reagan, right?
Right. Or replace him with Rush Limbaugh.
So, as we kind of mix things up, there are people from the chat room who I had just go ahead and send in questions via email, specifically to ask you since you're guest today. Jay wants to know if you're familiar with the Irreligiosophy podcast. He said they're former Mormons and awesome. So,
no, I'm afraid I've never heard of them. Love the name, though. If I can figure out how to pronounce it. I get special privileges being a Texan in that I'm not expected to pronounce anything correctly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I actually got an email about that because half the stuff we do is on Guadalupe, which technically should be pronounced Guadalupe. But if you're an Austin native, you know that it's correct for Austinites to pronounce it Guadalupe. And
yeah,
so
have,
if you say Guadalupe...
I have several links to back up the fact that if you say it any other way than Guadalupe, you are branding yourself as a non-native.
Which I think I'm almost fine with. except that it's weird.
Well, I remember trying to do business with somebody that was from this little town. I think it was in Oklahoma. The town, when you look at the word, if you have any knowledge of other countries, you would insist that this town's name is Prague. But in talking to one of the locals, that's Prague. Oh, okay, fine.
Prague.
You have it your way. Say it wrong all you want.
Ingmar has a question for you as well. I heard you tell a story about how a neighbor almost literally tried to exorcise atheism out of your son by banging a Bible on his head. Does that kind of thing happen regularly, or is it a freak occurrence?
I'm sorry to say that especially people that are listening to this show from other countries are going to be particularly alarmed. I mean, most of the time when I get outrage comments from people who are listening into anything that I say, they tend to be in Scandinavia or the UK or some reasonably civilized place such as that. In the environment that we live, it is such that you really are looking for a fight if you wear a Darwin t-shirt, because mm-hmm. you are so grossly outnumbered. Austin is almost considered an intellectual island in Texas.
Yes, in a vast sea of...
of idiots.
Ignorance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see recently there was somebody came out with a video that was rating the average intelligence by state? You know, I mean, and of course, Texan, you know, I knew that like Alabama would be lower than Texas, but...
Yeah, that's not saying much.
That's not saying much.
I think that's because we bust some people there.
The only reason they managed to get lower than us was because somebody saw a shadow that looked like a leprechaun and it made the news.
Yes.
Anybody that doesn't believe me, look it up. People in Alabama, that's a leprechaun. That looks like a leprechaun to me. They really bought into that, and they had people. There was this one guy that had fashioned a pipe that he had obviously bought yesterday at Tool World and wrapped a piece of leather around it or something, and then said that it was a 1,000-year-old artifact handed down by his Irish ancestry. This was especially funny considering how black this man was.
Wow.
What was it I was watching? I was watching some show the other day, a behind-the-scenes thing, and there was a black actor who had been cast in a role that was originally... the guy, character's name was like O'Grady or something, and he made this joke about how they, you know, I was trying to figure out exactly how I was going to play, you know, the white Irishman. And
well, you remember that show about the Irish blues band? Say it with me. I'm black on him proud.
Now, what I want to know is who bought the pipe from the guy.
He had a follow-up question to see if you felt that you experienced more prejudice because of your appearance after people find out you're an atheist.
That's an interesting question. People generally expect, when they look at me, it's not a great mystery as to whether or not I ride a bike. But
For the record, Aaron showed up today on his motorcycle in a leather jacket and everything. So that's Aaron for you.
He looks the part.
There's no mystery there. They're not particularly surprised to see me at a concert or something like that. But if I string together sentences that use two or three words of five syllables or more, then they're amazed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little sad. I remember in high school trying to figure out which of the typical stereotypes I belonged to, and I remember just classing myself as none of the above.
Although I did jokingly mention when we found out you were coming down that we were going to be the WWE television show, Undertaker and Bam Bam Bigelow, ready to take on all comers. Which, by the way, as a reminder, Aaron will be with me on the TV show tomorrow. And I'm planning on just opening up to callers from the get-go. So call, you know, if you have questions for him, if you have questions for me, if you have Christian friends, if you have creationist friends, we're taking all comers. And if you guys don't call, then we're just going to BS about whatever we feel like.
And I'd like to throw something else in, too. I mean, I get... easily 100 emails a day on average, and sometimes I'll get up to 400 or more. I don't mind that. However, on the show, Most of the emails that I get are very positive. I have saved many of them, and although I don't get a chance to answer all of them because of the volume, I appreciate what I get. However, tomorrow on the show, if you want to call just to say that you like something I'm doing, please just save that for the emails and whatnot, because I think that's the more appropriate place. We really would like to have conversations with people who are not already of our perspective.
Yeah. And that's something we can't say often enough. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, all of us appreciate the fact that we are appreciated in what we do. But it's like I've told people who send in those emails about the call, or who call in with that kind of praise. I'm pretty sure the thing that they liked about the show was the conversations with people who had views that were different from ours, not
right.
The conversations with, oh, you guys are, you know, it's so awesome. How do you guys do this in Texas? So,
And I don't think you can really prove the point of advocacy for atheism better than by letting the Christians present it themselves.
Yeah.
And here I am falling into the typical stereotype by taking theists
yes.
and identifying them only as Christians. This is something that I usually admonish others for, and I apologize, I've done that three times since I've been here.
It's my influence, I'm sure.
Yes, probably.
feel free to blame anything that goes wrong on me.
Yeah. Well, eventually when you are dropped into a forest of conifers, the tree that bothers you the most is going to be
yeah.
a conifer.
Yeah. The other thing is that, you know, I usually try to not, I fail on occasion. I try not to paint all religions with the same brush. I try not to paint all Christians with the same brush. And I will usually try to remember to use theist. But when I'm talking about particular things, for example, when we're talking about young earth creationism or whatever, that is in the domain of Christianity for the most part. And so I don't mind using the label then.
I would love to have, you know, if you want to have a religious board of education, that's fine. Let's have a couple of young earth creationists and a couple of Muslims and a couple of Jews and a couple of Hindus, and let's throw in some Sikhs in there. Let's have some diversity. Let's get it as, you know, as evenly spread as possible. I would love to see a conversation wherein we have to find out which one of you guys is right.
Yeah, of course, we have to pat them down before we let them, because it could get ugly.
You know what I'd really like to see? I'd like to see representatives from all the major religions and then subdivide that into so that each religion is represented by, say, half a dozen mm-hmm. subgroups, right? So we have Christianity, of course, would be the Lutherans and the Catholics and the
right.
Methodists and the Seventh-day Adventists or whatever. And then you would have the Sunnis and you would have the Jains, as we mentioned before. You have all these people and all their little subgroups gathered around, and we'd say, okay, here's the first question for you guys to come up with. Show me one thing that any of you has in your favor that is verifiably accurate.
Wow.
And then just wait for the crickets.
They will Next. Not be able to, even if they spoke, they would not be able to decide among themselves. Each individual group would not be able to decide among themselves
yeah, well,
what constitutes that.
The virtue of letting religious people talk to each other is, I've listened to stuff like the Bible Answer Man on the radio often, and I know that nobody is better at debunking, like, you know, Mormonism or Jehovah's Witnesses or Scientology than a committed Christian who wants to riddle it full of holes.
Right.
So you get people from a bunch of different sides asking them all what's wrong with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't hold back. I mean, you
well,
know,
here's the
those
beauty
guys
of it.
Think we atheists are brutal on
yeah,
religion.
Let's you and them fight.
Okay, what's the biggest argument that you get as an atheist? Is it the problem that we have as atheists is that we are saying that we know absolutely for certain that there is no chance whatsoever that there could ever have been any sort of God. That's what they say about
right.
us. Right.
That's their definition of atheism.
I'm saying no. I'll believe whatever the hell you tell me as long as you can give me good reason to. Show me a good reason.
Yeah.
You ain't got one, you haven't had one, and this is where we sit. Right, when you have this other conversation, when these two people start arguing with each other, trying to shoot each other's religion full of holes, they're going to be doing the same thing. Oh, well, you believe such and such and so, whereas the fact is this, and then they will assert who God is and what God is and what he wants and what he will uh-huh. do and what he hates, as if they know. So their position is that they're stating knowledge they don't really have. Ours is saying you don't know what you say you know.
Yeah. Right. Pointing out their absence of knowledge. They're in such a mindset that they think every type of claim or position is based on knowledge because they're so wrong about what they think they know. And so when we point out that lack of knowledge, they assume that we're asserting this position of knowledge that, well, I don't think any of us are asserting.
Right.
I did get an email from...
Because that's the way they talk to each other.
Well, we're simply not buying what they're selling. We're not selling another different thing. We're just not buying what they're selling. And they can't comprehend that.
I did get an email, though, from an atheist this week that was an interesting conversation. He was a little ticked off that we're not willing to... assert absolute certainty that there are no gods, and I was desperately well, trying to because
bad.
He does
too bad,
and I was desperately trying to explain, you know, why we don't. I'm as much of a strong atheist as I've met. I actively believe that there are no gods. I don't assert that this is an absolute certainty or a thing of knowledge. This is just, you know, the evidence is such that not only do I not believe gods exist, I believe they don't.
Yeah,
in all likelihood,
it's so likely
almost
that they don't that I believe.
And it depends on definition.
It's completely intolerable that you would make a positive statement that gods do not exist. For some reason, it's acceptable that you say that elves do not exist or that leprechauns do not exist, but you can't prove that.
Yeah, and I'm saying them both in the same context, and they're not kidding. Yeah, I wasn't going to read this question that came in for you. But then I realized that having not watched every video, this might actually reference some kind of private thing. He wants to know what you think of bacon, narwhals, and Ron Paul. If you don't get it, we can go on to the next.
If there was a subtle joke in there, I don't get it.
So, yeah.
Internet memes.
It's the new, it's the equivalent of Baba Booey, I think we just got hit with.
Okay. No, if there was an inside joke in that, I didn't get it.
There's narwhal song,
So, on a more somber note, I don't know if anybody else had this particular article about the violence in Nigeria this week.
Mm-hmm.
The attackers came at night and surrounded this small farming village, firing shots in the air to scare residents from their homes. Men, women, and children were hacked with machetes as they rushed out. Several houses were set on fire, with residents still inside. The deal here is that this was a group of Nigerian Muslims attacking a Christian village. And, of course, so this is getting some attention.
Yeah, I can understand
that. And while it is a tragedy that underscores the divisiveness of religion and the way religions, in particular these, can be used to justify such atrocities, the part that a lot of people didn't actually read is that this was a retaliation for Christian violence against their Muslim village.
This is one of the reasons that I love the internet so much, not just that you find out stuff, but also because... there's so much crap out there that you have to be skeptical about what you find. Not saying that that's what this is. But when you go to search out your own exploration of other news sources in other countries, rather than simply eating what you're fed, you find news articles coming from other countries. It may be in English, but not produced by any of the mega corporations out here. And I ran across some where Hindus... were complaining about the oppression in growing Christian societies within India and the heinous practices that the Hindus are having to endure at the hands of Christians. Now, were I to say that this was going on at the hands of Muslims, well, that is too, and nobody's terribly surprised by that. But you don't hear news like that in the United States.
Of course not.
Because we're all trained never to say anything bad about Christians in the United States.
Yeah. And we're also trained to be lazy and spoiled and pretty much ignore travesties that occur outside of our little sheltered existence.
Yes, and thus, you know, Christianity is so oppressed here in this country. Yeah, right. The majority.
Here's
it
the
doesn't
thing
get
that,
to wine
here's,
like
here's the
that,
thing
I'm
that
sorry.
Always bothered me. I mean, when people get so particular about their belief, about being oppressed for their belief. As an atheist, do you care what somebody else believes?
No, not really. Well,
I do.
Do you care what they believe, or do you care why they believe it, or do you care what the ramifications of that are?
I care about the ramifications.
Okay, the primary concern is ramifications.
I like to know if they believe very irrational things so that I know how to deal with that person. But
yeah, well, I'm sure probably some of this will come up tomorrow rather than today.
Beliefs inform actions.
Granted. Right. But see, I don't care. When somebody says that they believe in Christianity and they feel that they're going to be persecuted for that, only religions persecute religions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Muslims will be very concerned and will make it laws that you can't be a Christian, and Christians will make laws that you can't be anything else.
Right.
Okay, atheists don't give a crap.
Right.
Okay, believe what you want, and I don't understand where. They talk about, I'm being oppressed because I believe what I believe.
Because atheists make sure they can't pray in school, which is a big lie in itself.
Yeah, when I say I care what they believe, I care what they believe and I care why, because of the ramifications of it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I have any designs on imposing upon what they believe. Granted, I'd love to convince as many people to abandon their religious beliefs as possible, based on, not taking away people's hopes or trying to outlaw people's religions, but giving people insight into the fallacies, the misunderstandings, the poor evidence upon which they've based beliefs that I view as false. When I ask somebody that calls in a show, tell me what you believe and why, it's because if you're actually right, if you actually have evidence, great. I've learned something new. And I don't, in all cases, eliminate immediately the possibility that you could be right. This is not, scientific, rational atheism is not some dogmatic assertion that we have all the answers and that religious people are somehow stupid.
But religion does not want you to make an informed decision. It wants you to make a decision.
I have been told many times growing up that it was wrong to question, right? In many different forms, I was given that the end justifies the means.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I've been told many things that logically don't make sense. I mean, how dare you question the will of God? Because I'm a little child. I remember I was like 8 years old, and I said, well, how did God take, this molecule representing, alcohol, and this one representing fructose, and this one, all these other molecules that are involved in wine, and converting all of them into this. How does he do that? How dare you question the, I just want to understand. They don't.
Right.
It seems
actively
evident to
me. Do not wish to understand. They're willfully ignorant.
Well, I was going to go somewhere else with that, but damn it, Matt threw me off my track.
I'm sorry. I do that. It's kind of like controlled chaos format. And
oh, sure.
And there's no editing. Whatever the hell gets said here actually gets out. Because I'm too lazy to edit. I think that's the biggest reason why we've never bothered to edit the show.
I've done video editing, and it's horrible. And audio editing is only slightly less horrible.
Well, I actually enjoy it.
No, get out of this place.
I don't mind video editing in the sense of where you're trying to create something. In this case, I think the biggest reason I don't edit it, apart from being lazy, is that it would be... I like the fact that it flows all the way through, that it's a live show with people, offering up their opinions. And it would be like, well, what would I cut out? Am I going to edit out bits of, dead air that we've had, or when we're bullshitting to fill space? And I'd just rather not decide.
Well, in the first couple of years when the Nonprofits was on the air, I cut a demo CD of the Nonprofits to shop around to some people that, it ultimately didn't go anywhere. But not only did I have to look for clips among two seasons that would be an especially good representative of it, but because it was like, would have been regular radio that we were hoping to go after, I had to actually go and cut out some swears. I got pretty creative with that, really. You could hardly tell, even with Jeff, which was quite an accomplishment.
Wow.
when my children were really young, I actually trained myself to, you know, if I dropped something on my foot, what actually happened? I dropped a brick on my foot while I was wearing sandals, and I actually said, "Duckies and bunnies!"
My best friend and I, too, when I was at, like, 10, in order to be able to swear around his mother, we coined the word NIF, which stands for Not In This House. Which is what she would always say if she caught us actually swearing.
So I want to comment on a study that came. There's a couple of studies that came out that I think have probably gotten a little more play than perhaps they should have. One of them I'm not even going to bother with today, and that was the atheist more intelligent than theist.
And
there was this tiny variation in IQ in a study that I think didn't really represent a strong correlation, but it got, you know, it was all over the place. But this is a different study from Toronto that a sociology professor in Toronto questioned people about their beliefs with regard to God.
Okay.
82% of participants reported that they depend on God for help and guidance in making decisions. 71% said that they believe that when good or bad things happen, these occurrences are simply part of God's plan for them. 61% indicated that they believe God has determined the direction and course of their lives. And 32% agreed with the statement, "There's no sense in planning a lot because ultimately my fate is in God's hands."
Okay, I need to jump in.
Tell me again
in.
The value of free will.
Okay.
I got a dollar that says he's going to say what I was going to say.
All right.
Would you please, I mean, I was chomping at the bit on each one of those comments. Would you please read back that list one at a time?
82% of participants reported that they depend on God for help and guidance in making decisions.
Okay. No, we're going to skip that. We're going to go to the next one.
71% said they believe that when good or bad things happen, these occurrences are simply part of God's plan for them.
That one. How does that happen? Okay, I gave an example in one of my videos where you lose your keys, and you would normally have been out the house by now, but you can't find your keys, so that holds you up. And then there's a phone call, and it turns out that it's a contest, and you're going to win the contest if you know the answer to this question. And just by sheer dumb luck, one of your friends happened to have told you something that clued you in so that you know the answer to that question. So coincidence, you win the trip. Another coincidence, you're on the trip and you meet somebody and you fall in love, and so now God has somehow orchestrated all of that because it was his plan that you meet that special person. Did God hide your keys? And how did he go about doing that? Did God supplant put this idea into your friend's head and make him and how did he make him tell you? And how did he make you lose your keys? And how did he make that other person how do these things happen? What's the mechanics? Or is God just a story writer and we do whatever the hell he says?
And how happy and wonderful is it if you lived a long time ago and your name happened to be Job?
But that's the thing. It's all part of God's plan. Well, if that happened, whatever happened, God did it. How? Nobody has an idea. There's not even. It goes back to what I said before about how do you make this molecule turn into this molecule? Shut up. That's the answer that I get.
It certainly does seem like an unnecessarily convoluted plan as opposed to, say, like teleporting the girl to the front of your house or something. I mean, if he's going to go to all that trouble to manipulate the laws of time and space, he might as well just be a little less circumspect about it. It reminds me of a story that Dan Barker told in one of his books about how his deconversion process. And he said that when he was still a serious Christian, he thought that he was hearing the voice of God in his head say, "Something wondrous is going to happen if you take these off roads." He's just driving in his car and he says, "Okay, now turn here. Okay, now get out of your car and walk into this cornfield." And then he goes out and stands in the cornfield for a while, and then eventually he feels like an idiot and goes back to his car.
All right, so go back. Now, this brings back to the first question that you just asked, that God helps us make our decisions. Right? Well, here's a great example. I was taking Russian language, right? And we've got this couple from some little podunk, tiny-ass town. They were real Texans, you could tell.
Wow. And
they were in this class to take Russian because the Lord inspired them, called upon them to teach them Russian so they could be ministers in the Soviet Union.
Right.
This is 10 years after the Soviet Union's collapse, but they don't feel
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, in Heber, Texas, or wherever the hell it was they were from.
We want to re-defeat godless communism.
Yeah, they couldn't be bothered. Well, here's the funny thing. These people are convinced that God has told them that this is their mission, their calling. Right, God, infallible, has told these people that they're going to go and they're going to be ministers, and he's going to have them learn the Russian language, which I can tell you from experience, ain't that easy.
I imagine.
Okay, so especially when you talk
like this.
Right. So what happens when these people inevitably failed?
Good question.
Now, they did fail. Uh-huh. They dropped out of class.
Wait, I'm guessing that they lost their faith in God because he misled them, right?
No. That couldn't happen.
Chance.
I mean, God is infallible. He called them. It was a calling. They're going to learn how, and then they don't, and then they drop out, and they don't learn Russian, and they don't go to Russia. And what do they do, just forget about all that? Yeah. What happens in their mind? You remember when Pat Robertson said that like in 1978, he said that the Earth was going to be destroyed in the planetary alignment of 1982.
Yeah.
You remember when he made that prediction?
Oh,
what happened when that didn't happen? Oh, what? I just didn't say that.
Well, you know, Jeff used to do a regular segment on the TV show and the radio show, actually, called The Rapture Report, where he would just, like, collate all of the various predictions, because there's dozens of them every year. There's bunches of them all the time. And he would read, like, what's coming up in the next few months, and then he would read which of them just passed and say, nope, that didn't happen either. You know, these things happen on a regular basis. I mean, it's actually a very central story to the Jehovah's Witnesses, as I found out once, is that they predicted that the world was going to end, and then, like, it didn't. But then they said, oh, well, it was kind of close to when World War One happened. So we'll just say that our prediction fit that.
If you stretch it, you wrap it around a little bit, and interpret it with your head on sideways, then yes, that might make sense. Yeah. But it goes back to what we just said. Okay, in the first question, God helps you make your decisions. He tells you that you're going to go to Russia and you need to learn the Russian language, and then a month later when you drop out because you're utterly incompetent, how is that God's mistake? How is it? Well, you've got to take the blame for it. Or
yeah.
You have to ignore that it ever happened, and you have to forget that you ever told anybody that God told you to do that.
If you're honest, the least you can do is say, okay, we didn't have enough faith. We failed God. You know,
I how guess could that's God how not know that in advance?
Yeah. I can tell you from what happens in my experience, because I've seen this over and over and again with regard to family members who will just flatly pronounce, and now they've changed the way they do this. We feel God is leading us this way.
Uh-huh.
And that way, when it fails, they were
wrong.
They misunderstood God. God really didn't want them to do that. They were just wrong. And
God,
if they get it right,
infallible.
Yes,
right.
But they're
right.
Fallible.
But they're fallible.
They thought God wanted them to do something, but they were wrong. They misunderstood what God wanted them to do. Is
but
how they do it.
It's their job to defy the experts. How can you admit to fallibility and proclaim yourself to be a champion against the experts at the same time?
We're back to the dentist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't faith saying I'm infallible?
No, faith means believing impossible nonsense for no good reason and maintaining that belief even despite evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, well, I believe I actually said on the show last week it's pronouncing yourself infallible by proxy.
Right.
It's basically, yes, I know I'm a fallible human being, but I personally know the guy who is never wrong. So if I get a feeling in my head, you know you can trust it.
Yeah, Russell has tried to point out on a number of occasions, you know, when people raise these types of claims, mm-hmm. that the first thing we should always do is get them to admit that if their claims are wrong, that this is evidence against the existence of God, against their foundational claims. And so I have people who will email me, and they will say, I can dig through the emails now, God wanted me to write to you and present you this evidence for his existence. And about 50 to 60% of the time, it's fucking Pascal's wager.
Sure.
And occasionally, it's something a little more. But it's nothing that I haven't heard before. And I keep thinking, you know, if there is a God, By the way, they will ask what evidence, you know, do you need in order to believe? And I was like, well, first of all, if there is a God, certainly that God should know what sort of evidence would convince me. And he would be capable of presenting that evidence. And he wouldn't have sent me somebody who is as dumb as a sack of hammers to
right.
to give me an argument that I've refuted 50,000 times on the TV show as one of the worst possible arguments. The fact that you knew nothing about me, knew nothing about the background, knew nothing about the show, and felt that God wanted you to relay Pascal's wager to me just one more time, as if I hadn't. Okay.
So this calls back to all the many times that people have come up to me on the street or in a public park or something like that and say, did you know that Jesus died for your sins? And I say, whoa, really? I've lived my entire life
yes.
here in this country, somehow immersed in a holy Christian society, and I've never heard that piece of crap. Well, at least not 10 times yet today, but it's early.
Yeah.
How could I live in a Christian nation for so long?
My favorite, of course, I try not to judge people too quickly. And on occasions, I have just oodles and gobs of patience, and I will carry on long discussions on the show or an email. And sometimes, because I'm human and I get in moods, I have no patience, and I will hang up on your ass, and I will delete your email, and I don't care. But when somebody wants to have a conversation, I like to, first of all, try and get definitions sorted first, if I can. But also, I'd like to know a little bit something about the person that I'm talking to. So when somebody does nothing but quote Bible verses, as if I've never read, I mean, okay, right. I'm sure there are people who haven't. But, and then to top it off, they pick specific verses that are just about the worst possible verses that you could cite if you're going to try and prove the existence of your God. Somebody wrote me the other day to talk about how in Isaiah there's these passages that he interprets as evidence that God relayed information about genetics or something to the ancient people. And I was like, and this is in the same chapter where at the start of the chapter it gives, it's in the exact same chapter where it says rabbits chew the cud.
So you give them the ultimatum. Either homosexuality is a sin or you're not allowed to eat shellfish. Same chapter, make up your mind.
And the thing is, once people get refuted with the one question that God apparently told them to call in with, the argument that would fix everything, they don't bat an eye or feel even a little bit of embarrassment. What they do is they just change the subject and go on to the next argument.
When Ma and Pa Kettle have to go learn Russian and then utterly fail.
Right.
Yeah. Wait, now, getting into those other questions, if I can, I just want to zip through those. We've done the first two. What was the next one?
61% indicated that they believe God has determined the direction and course of their lives.
That gets back to the whole way, just how does God manipulate anything? And it turns out that it is all just a story that he wrote, and we're only characters in the damn thing. So it's just like every episode of Rocky Horror Picture Show, they used to scream at the screen. You don't do it this time because it got you killed last week. Well, it got you killed again this week, too. It's exactly the same thing because you're a character.
Just,
you have no free will.
We're just hitting our marks and saying our lines.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's the next one?
I find it interesting, though, that evidently 10% of the people who think that these occurrences are part of God's plan for them don't think that God has determined the direction and course of their lives. But the last one is that 32% agreed with the statement, there's no sense in planning a lot because ultimately my fate is in God's hands.
Well, they could have left it at there's no sense.
Yeah.
Man.
My thing, though, and I will lose a dollar, one of the things that jumped out at me about this is that this is, I don't want to say it's useless information, but one of the problems that I keep having with studies and polls and things like this is that this comes, first of all, is no surprise to me, the information that's in there. But it also doesn't tell me anything, because you're asking people to self-identify. When I was a Christian, I would have agreed with all of those, I think, with the possible exception of the final one, because I was of the view that God's direction and plan for my life was not necessarily fatalistic, that I had to make plans and I had to make decisions and that I would be judged on those. Mm-hmm. So I would have disagreed with the last one. But I would have agreed with all of those when asked and presented in a poll. The reality, though, is that by and large, I lived my life without. I would have been lying because I took actions and did things without talking to God first, maybe on a big thing.
Sure.
I took actions and did things without any thought to the fact that, you know, my life was in God's hands. It's this kind of, they're saying what they know they're supposed to say because it's part of their beliefs. And while there are people, and I know people, who do live like this, where everything, you know, they get up in the morning and they're praising God and everything's in God's hands and we're going to ask God about everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and of course they get into the problem of when they're wrong, who's at fault here, them or God? Right. And it's always them.
Just twittering every second to God. Yeah.
But I don't know that we get huge. I don't know that this study really presents us with anything useful, because when you ask people to self-identify what their beliefs are, they're more than likely going to stick with orthodoxy, and not give you as much information about how they actually go about living.
Just because you've been conditioned that you have to fit into this block.
In that situation, I'm tempted to say, okay, I'm tempted to say, so what?
I mean, so we have.
If that's what they say they are, then they're that way.
The numbers vary wildly.
They're not really that way.
But I'm sure there are at least. I mean, I've heard that there are thousands, but I'm sure that there are at least hundreds of Christian denominations. Mm-hmm. I've seen a list of at least 200 different Christian denominations. Now, they try to fit into the box, but any deviation results in another whole denomination and maybe sub-denominations after that, and then they're all at war with each other. And they're all diverging away from each other. And I have to wonder, what I said, you know, before about you want to find the truth, find the root, right? Well, these people that want to prove the existence of God, they're citing the Bible for you, and they're not trying to support either Allah, Yahweh, or Jesus. Mm-hmm. They're only trying to support Jesus. And they're not arguing for whether a God exists. They're arguing for whether their particular tiny little denomination within all of them is absolutely right and without error, whereas everybody else is completely fucking wrong. So, if you want to convince me that there's a God, you have to accept the fact that whether there's a God or not, the Bible is wrong either way.
Yeah.
So show me that there's a God. I'm completely open to it. But the Bible has already been disproved. Leave it alone.
And for your edification, the Wikipedia page entitled List of Christian Denominations has a disclaimer saying, note, this is not a complete list, but aims to provide a comprehensible overview, as there are reported to be approximately 38,000 Christian denominations.
Of course.
Now, and I'd argue that there's one denomination for every Christian.
That would seem to be, yes.
I think
it's like the definition of, like, species versus genus or other higher definitions. There's no hard line between those classifications, and when you get close enough, people call themselves the same denomination, but really they're in families, just but, like biological
here's the thing:
species.
They call themselves the same denomination. They will proudly tell you that Christianity is the world's biggest religion, and then they will also proudly tell you that Catholics aren't really Christians.
Funny you should mention that,
which of course would mean that Christianity is the fourth largest religion. Because without Catholics, it would be Islam first, and then it would be Roman Catholics, and then it would be Hindus, and then it would be Protestant Christians.
Yeah. Now, earlier you mentioned, you know, getting to the root to find the truth and stuff. Well, that's kind of weird, because when you're looking at science, facts and evidence and stuff starts winnowing things down. It cuts off alleys, you know, that lead to dead ends, and it coalesces into a single truth, and then it doesn't split off from there.
Exactly.
You've got the theory of gravity. Okay, that's it. Now there's some people maybe, you know, on the edge of physics trying to, you know, explain things, right. But they're feeling their way forward, and when the evidence arrives, there'll be one
of course, is why crackpot splinter groups always wind up believing that science is one giant conspiracy against them.
Yeah.
Because they're used to having variable definitions of truth based on who you're talking to.
The way I
illustrated. Whereas science converges to one answer.
Yeah. I stepped on words.
Go ahead.
I apologize. The way I illustrated this in my series was by showing the game of 20 questions on one perspective. 20 questions, and you zero in on what the truth is. Whereas, in the alternative perspective, in the religious perspective, you end up with a whole bunch of people that are all completely blind, and they're heading off in different directions, and all of them are following the absolute truth.
Right.
They've got no idea. And so they're making up what they can. There's no way of – there's no auto-correction. There's no direction. Everybody's being directed by God in completely opposite directions.
Right. So, you know, even if one denomination is correct, that means all the others are wrong. Your chance of being right is slim.
Well, if you say absolute truth, then you're right. Then they're all going to be absolutely wrong. If you admit that your perspective has a degree of error – and you're honest enough to find where that error is, and you have a means of correcting that error, now it's no longer religious. That's what science does.
Yeah.
And you were talking about that it was strange that I should mention Roman Catholics being excluded from Christianity.
Yeah.
You were going to say something about that.
Yeah, and I'll hit that point, but I have to backtrack a little bit to where we were talking about how they'll cite that Christians, you know, the popularity by including all these different groups. They'll do that anytime it's in their benefit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they're going to say this is how many Christians there are, they'll include Catholics and other denominations that they might otherwise reject.
They'll inflate it as much as possible.
And that's how we ended up with the term Judeo-Christian.
Right,
because
sure.
Judeo-Christian doesn't exist. It's not a religion. It's not a unified group. It's not a collection. It is a political label that people have used to say, well, you know, the United States was based on Judeo-Christian values, so that they don't piss off the Jews when they're saying this.
Right, and also, you know, they're not above extending it even further to just saying monotheism. Because, I mean, you know, when they're talking to atheists, they're going to want to say, you know, almost everybody in the world believes in some god, as if those people all belong in a group together.
Right. Yeah, but they will also tell you that God hates religion.
Yeah.
Okay? And Christianity, you know, you should have Christianity, but you should not have religion, because religion is bad and Christianity is good. And my question for them is, what is the number one most dominant religion in the world today? Oh, well, it's Christianity. Okay, think that through.
Yeah. I'll wait. You get back to me. So the issue of Catholicism, I think almost all of us are familiar with Jack Chick.
When I first saw a Jack Chick tract, I was 8 years old. Okay, I remember seeing it. I remember somebody left it on our sofa in our house. Somebody, you know, one of my mom's friends was visiting. I'm a little bitty boy. And I pick up, it's a comic book, right?
Yeah.
I pick it up and I look at it. And I wasn't two pages into it before I realized, at 8 years old, this man is insane.
Yeah.
This is propaganda.
This man is full of hatred. That's all it was. It was hatred and insanity, and it was completely wrong. And what child my age couldn't tell that? And I was looking around for a room full of adults who couldn't tell that.
Right.
Yeah. It's Jack Chick is famous for his anti-Catholicism views. I have a Christian friend who didn't know who Jack Chick was and wasn't familiar with Chick Tracks.
You need to look up chick.com, C-H-I-C-K.
I'm already there.
Yeah. I'm not telling you. I'm telling the listeners.
Yeah.
Chick.com. They have a listing of their tracks that they want people to hand out. Now, you really need to look at these tracks.
Yeah.
In one of them, it labels all of the Hindu gods as being created by Satan. And that was the tract that actually got me onto YouTube.
Yeah. And you can read the tracts there. He wasn't familiar with Jack Chick or Chick Tracks, but Jack Chick has also done bigger comic books. And when he was a kid, he remembered this religious comic book that was bloody and gruesome and gave him nightmares for weeks. Had no idea who it was. So when he heard me talking about Jack Chick Tracks, we went and looked, and the comic book that had given him nightmares is actually there, and it's one of the ones.
Wow.
But the reason I bring this up is that Jack Chick has a tract called The Death Cookie, which is about the Eucharist. And it's one of his many anti-Catholic
These tracks are anti-lesbian, anti-feminism, anti-American, anti-Catholicism, anti-everybody but chick track.
Yeah.
So, you know, isn't it interesting that P.Z. Myers came under so much criticism for basically throwing a wafer in the trash with some other stuff, whereas Jack Chick pretty much skates by writing an entire book about how it's all satanic.
He just referred to the third largest religion on earth as Satanists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a little bit of a political faux pas.
Apparently not. Yeah, I mean, if an
atheist... You know, there's close to a billion people there that just might want to take offense to that comment.
Hey.
Fortunately for you, most of them are pacifists.
So, the story here, I had Jack Chick tracks when I was a kid. And, you know, I was raised Southern Baptist. Mm-hmm. Southern Baptist churches often buy Chick tracks in bulk and pass them out. I had tons of them when I was a kid, handed them out, got them in Easter baskets and, you know, Halloween baskets, even though I remember getting the anti-Halloween Chick tract on Halloween. But a Baptist pastor in Tennessee says he now regrets that his church distributed an anti-Catholic leaflet.
Aw, really?
They passed out the Death Cookie tract because it was one of a, you know, they just...
Yeah, sure, sure.
We're going to buy 10,000 of these Chick tracts in an assortment, and we're just going to hand them out to people. Well, they started pissing off the Catholics in the area because they're handing out these anti-Catholic... and so the pastor... In typical Weasley Baptist fashion, I'm speaking from experience, says, looking back, I don't think it was the right tract to give out.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
There isn't a right Chick tract to give out for anything. And any Christian that would somehow have been able to listen to this show up to this point, you really need to look up Chick tracts. I try to encourage every believer that I meet to please look at Chick tracts. Please actually watch the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Pay attention to what Pat Robertson actually says. Yeah. Because when he goes and tells his 30,000 some odd subscribers to go out and kill homosexuals wherever you find them, which is what he said in 1994, it seems to me that only atheists are sitting around remembering that he ever said that. And if you don't have your VCR on, well, then you got a hard time proving it. And if you have your VCR on, you can't get anybody else to watch it.
The tract itself says that the devil made a pact with the Pope to take over the world through a false god, the wafer god, the greatest religious con job in history.
Which just calls me back to when... Never mind.
I get the impression, you know, reading Chick tracts is like sawing Fred Phelps' skull open and looking. You know, it's like...
Okay, the Pat Robertson thing, we mentioned the making the deal with the devil. I know that he was in big news recently for saying that Haiti made a deal with the devil, and then he tells the person he's talking to, true story. Really? Verify that for me, will you, Pat?
Yeah.
Show me how that's a true fucking story. But then, this is the same guy who predicted that the world was going to end in 1982. Yeah. He also said, back in 1994, when he said that we needed to go out and kill homosexuals, he said that the earthquake in San Francisco was caused by homosexuality.
Yep.
He says frequently that homosexuality causes earthquakes.
Boy, they really have loud sex over there.
And he said that these other earthquakes that happened in third world countries and little island nations at the time, there was a series of natural disasters that were terrible as far as the toll of lives taken. But when you compare that to the fire that happened in Malibu, in terms of dollars, somehow Malibu completely overrules Haiti.
Right.
Right? Yep. Or the Dominican Republic and what they had in a hurricane at that time. And Pat Robertson's explanation for that was not that every square foot of Malibu costs $1 million where you can buy the Dominican Republic for the cost of one of those houses. His reasoning for why the dollar value, and he completely ignored the loss of human life, His explanation for why the dollar value was so much higher in the United States was because the United States, he said, was the only country which allows homosexuals to live. End of statement.
Whoa, whoa,
period.
Whoa.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
Why is it that non-believers like myself are watching this guy
And we're remembering what he says. And then everybody else, the believers, are like the ones that were told to go learn Russian and then just conveniently forgot that they told everybody that there was their calling to do so when they realize they can't do it. I'm sorry, I'm getting on a soapbox. I'm going to try to calm myself down.
That's why you're here. That's why you're here, man. Of course,
I'm gonna have to
alternate theories on the show that some places are hit because there aren't enough gays to generate their magical gay shield of protection.
The rainbow of protection.
You can actually document this effect in the case of some disasters that don't get focused on.
When God hit Katrina because of all the gays down there, it was the magical protective rainbow shield of the gays that kept the French Quarter relatively unharmed.
You know, on the Katrina thing, my son and I were watching, you know, my son has done a couple of videos with me, and we were watching some news documentary that was talking about if New Orleans ever gets hit by a level 4 or greater hurricane, direct hit, it will sink. And I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
Right? My son remembers seeing that. And it was 2 years later that Katrina was coming, and then there was it said it was a level 4, and it was headed straight for New Orleans, going to hit a direct hit. And I called my son in, who remembers details like I do. And I told him, look, it's a level 4. It's going to hit New Orleans dead on. He says, it's going to sink. Exactly. Bingo. Like you told us 2 years ago. Now, why is it that, you know, if my son and I lived in New Orleans and we heard this news, you know what? We'd be looking into real estate elsewhere.
Yeah.
At least an emergency home somewhere else. But all the people that were living in New Orleans that put their faith in prayer and completely ignored the warnings that were issued years earlier.
Right.
Well, you know, to be fair, I mean, a lot of those people were very poor, and it takes a certain amount of resources
when
to
they
be able
refused
to, just move you
to
go. Yeah, I mean, there's a difference there.
Okay,
but I mean,
I can understand not being able to leave, but when they bring buses and say, "Please get on," and you don't, well, I'm sorry, that's your fault.
I remember hearing a story about how people get very tied to places. There was an anecdote I heard. Actually, it might have been an anecdote in a fiction book, so I don't know if I can trust it. But somebody had spoken to a Holocaust survivor who said that he said, "Why didn't you guys leave when it looked like it was getting bad?" And he said, "Well, you know, we had a piano, and we Jews are very partial to the piano, and it was difficult to leave where we were."
And the piano's in 8 pieces now.
Yeah.
You know, we drove through Jarrell on the way down here, and I had driven through Jarrell once before on Jarrell's most famous day. Jarrell is a little town north of Austin, not very far, that on the day that I happened to drive through, at the moment that I happened to be driving through, was hit by a Category 5 tornado that I watched form.
Wow.
From just a spike in the clouds.
Cool.
It was the most impressive thing I ever saw. And fortunately, I was on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see this massive, awesome tornado hit a two-story house and vaporize it. You know how they tell you to go hide in a central room?
Oh, yeah.
You know, or get in the bathtub, right? The bathtub was 300 feet in the air. It folded the foundation. I mean, the house was gone.
Right.
The foundation was gone.
Sucked
that
up
tornado
out of
stripped asphalt off the freeway. Okay,
man.
When people are talking about, you know, you're going to stay in a place because you have a nice piano and there's a hurricane coming, and hurricanes are just a whole birdcage full of tornadoes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen what that can do, and I would say move the piano or lose it. You know, go see your Aunt Esther for the weekend. What the hell?
Yeah.
If the piano's still there, then great. That was sound.
So we're officially into overtime.
Oh, yeah.
Did anybody have any stories that they had to get in today?
I'd just like to throw in that my son suggested that for people trying to survive hurricanes, people that live in Florida, for example, he said when he was about 8 years old that they should all live in inflatable bounce houses.
Cool.
Real quick, I won't go into detail, but Michael Newdow lost a case in San Francisco this week, and they ruled that under God, in the Pledge of Allegiance, is constitutional, and so is the God on the money thing.
Yeah, you know why? Because it's a statement of patriotism. The thing that the court overlooked was the fact that the reason this thing is viewed as a statement of patriotism is because in 1954, they'd redefined patriotism to being anti-godless communism and adopted this. And so they're saying, you know, we did it as an act of patriotism. Yeah, but you're ignoring the fact that the act of patriotism, the encouragement there, was specifically in opposition to godless communism. And I don't know how... I mean, in much the same way that one of the Supreme Court justices invented a grandfather clause out of thin air for the monument that's down at the Capitol, this circuit court has just decided, you know, it's not really a religious thing. It's a patriotism thing.
Or it's tradition. It's an artifact or something.
Well, they were saying their ruling was straight up that it was patriotism. And I'm like, so, you know, what do I have to do to be jingoistic?
Well, yeah.
My God, this is the best court ruling ever.
I know a number of teachers, and of course many of them are upset about the whole Pledge of Allegiance thing and now the Pledge of Texas thing, and both of which include a pledge to God, right? So if you have a student,
that was added.
So if you have a student who refuses to pledge allegiance because of her belief in God, she is still going to be she's still going to be harassed by the faculty of the school, not just for not pledging allegiance to a government that needs to earn its citizenship, that needs to earn my allegiance, right? But now they want me to pledge to this invisible deity at the same time, and the two conflict.
Yeah.
Because the deity does not want you to pledge allegiance to anything but it.
Right. Right. Faith in God is un-American. You know, it's you can't define your loyalties like that.
Ironically, in the type of America that was envisioned by Thomas Jefferson, yes, there was a person named Thomas Jefferson, and yes, he had really great ideas and was well-learned, but we can't speak of him anymore. In the type of America that he came up with, there was no pledge, and there should be no pledge.
Right.
The government should be afraid of its people. And thanks to the way that things have been run, you'd be hard-pressed not to find people afraid of their government. And largely because they're doing exactly what the government tells them to as far as what to believe and what to listen to and how to react.
And on that note, let's wrap up this show and call it a day.
Wrap it up? Okay.
I will be going to the Dog and Duck.
Now?
Not immediately now. I will be there probably by 6.
Okay. Right. I'm not quite sure what my schedule is for the rest of the day, and I don't currently have a vehicle that's working.
You can't fit on mine.
I wasn't going to ask for a lift, but quick reminders, Arn will be down at Dog and Duck sometime around 6 or so. Also, he'll be in the studio with us tomorrow.
I should probably amend that because let's say I'll be a little later than 6, maybe 7.
We'll also be in the studio tomorrow for the Atheist Experience. And yes, as a reminder, you can actually come down and sit in the studio and watch the show live. Just remember that it's the small studio and, you know, there's not a ton of room for people to sit. But anybody that wants to is welcome to do so.
And we prefer that people not behave the way they do in the Senate room when they invite a guest speaker from the wrong religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for coming, Aaron. It's been
Arun,
good
please.
To
Arun.
Meet you.
Arun.
It's been good meeting you. I blew
Thank
it.
You.
Okay.
Nobody says the name right.
Why don't you just pick a better name?
Yes, you could be like everybody else if we could all be unique together.
I actually had one Steve? Person. That's very nice.
I actually had one person ever in my life, and it was last week. One person heard my name and say, "Oh, are you Swedish?"
Well, right. Our show that was. Grateful to our special guest we are. Your hosts, Matt Dillahunty, Russell Glasser, and myself, Dennis Lube, back in 2 weeks with another episode will be. With Punch You in the Head for Jesus by Kirk 420. Until then, we leave you.
I'm gonna punch you in the head. I'm gonna punch you in the head. I'm gonna punch you in the head for Jesus. I'm gonna punch you in the head. You will wish that you were dead when I punch you in the head for Jesus. Better turn the other cheek.
can sit on the fence. I'm going to resort to buy and dance when I punch you in the head.